The Bob Siegel Show is made possible in part by ProBuilt, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studios, W&S Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent KPRZ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Yes, it is the Bob Siegel Show, otherwise known as the Controversy Hour. We don't shy away from controversy on our program, and for a very good reason. Many of you out there will relate to this. Don't you just hate it when you're discussing a hot topic over dinner or at a party? Not when kids are around, but you're at a party or at dinner, something about religion or politics or some divisive social issue comes up, and just when it's getting juiciest, somebody pulls the rug out from under your feet by saying, "Can we just change the subject?" Okay, there you have my reason. Welcome to the program that doesn't change the subject, and welcome as well to my co-host who never changes subjects, but she's been known to change a light bulb or two only when the occasion called for it. Sharon Cashard. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you, Bob. And Bob, when I realized we were going to do another controversial topic today, I started jotting down some of the topics that you've been talking about over the last several months.
It gave you a trip down memory lane,
yeah.
You're saying?
And I just wanted to let our listeners know that you really do deal with a lot of controversial topics, both within the church and intellectual arguments that atheists might raise. You refuted Dan Brown's erroneous claims, I might add, to the Da Vinci Code.
And they're making a movie out of that, so I guess we'll have a chance to have another round
of that
when it comes out.
You did a whole hour on how does the Bible explain a loving God who would allow evil, such as the terrorist attack and 9/11? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus?
Well, and that was, of course, speculation. We don't know how God will judge, but that didn't keep me from not blathering for a whole hour about it anyway.
Do people really live like they were created accidentally? You pointed out how moral relativism may sound good in the sterility of a classroom, but if that student walks out and sees that their bike is missing, all of a sudden they're not a moral relativist anymore.
There's no such thing as a true moral relativist. That is correct.
And one of the topics we dealt with inside the church was Phariseeism and how our legalism sometimes pushes non-Christians away.
And we never think we're legalistic. It's always the other
That's
guy.
Right.
We're spiritual. We've got it figured out. We're going the extra 100%. Yes.
I wanted to point out to our listeners that you really do deal with a wide variety of controversial topics. And if they miss those, they can always go to your website at www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, and they can listen in. On
Remember, that's .com, not .com, it's .net. We're the cooler websites are. We know you'll be tempted to type in .com, but it's .net or your old pal Bob won't pop up. Well, Sharon, speaking of controversy, few subjects rival the topic of abortion, and I'm convinced that the biggest problem with this issue is faulty communication. I think if people really knew what they were talking about and really having the facts, there wouldn't be a whole lot to argue. George Orwell, the writer, once predicted a day when history would actually be rewritten to advance dangerous agendas. Here is the new, inaccurate, rewritten history of the right to life movement. You see, students, it never had anything to do with concern for the unborn or compassion. Instead, a bunch of male chauvinist pigs who wanted to eternally suppress women sat around a big coffee table drinking rum and smoking cigars and deciding that they were against all forms of birth control. And any man who denies a woman this fundamental right is against feminism in any form. He wants to see all women submissive to their husbands, rustling up grub in the kitchen. That is the new, inaccurate, rewritten history of the abortion controversy, a clever rewriting of the fact that most of the leaders in the pro-life movement are women, not men. Women, are you catching this? This is not a men versus women's issue. This is an issue women themselves are split over. Even women feminists take different positions on abortion. In fact, there's an organization called Feminists for Life, made up of people who care about the rights of all females, including unborn baby females. And today, we are so honored to have a leading Right to Life spokesperson, Michaeline Friedenberg. People, I have heard many speak out on this issue, and I have never heard anybody do it better than Michaeline. She's a gifted communicator and even a skilled debater, but when she debates, she's so filled with compassion that people immediately sense her genuine spirit. Those who would oppose Michaeline find her so disarming and yet so in tune with the honest facts that they are simply unsure what to do with her. Michaeline not only expresses concern for the unborn life, but hope, forgiveness, and healing for women who have had abortions. Michaeline had an abortion herself many years ago. Coming to grips with her own ordeal switched her from being pro-choice to pro-life. She talks about this candidly and with notable courage. Michaeline, it is such an honor to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Michaeline works for the Life Resource Network, and in that capacity, she does speaking engagements at university campuses, in human sexuality classrooms, psychology, women's studies. She talks at conventions, and the most exciting thing of all, she speaks on Capitol Hill to interns. She briefs them, and she briefs staffs, the staff briefings, and she also does testimonies before subcommittees for the Senate. And Michaeline, could you tell our audience how you first got involved in the pro-life movement? Or why, I should say why, yeah, you first got involved?
Well, as Bob already mentioned, as a teenager, for me as a feminist, I really assumed that abortion was necessary for women to attain their educational and career goals. So when I was 18 and found out I was pregnant, it's not surprising that I ended up choosing to have an abortion. But what was surprising, really shocking for me, was the fallout afterwards. I did not expect that. The experience itself was humiliating. It did not empower me. I did not walk out feeling better. Mm-hmm. And as my life really crumbled around me in trying to deal with the emptiness and for me, I became more and more aware that I had indeed ended a life. And there wasn't any way around that, no matter how I tried to justify it, that I began to think, are there other women who are feeling this way? And we make abortion sound so easy, like we can erase a pregnancy and move on with our lives, and yet you have to walk forward with the consequences of that decision for the rest of your life. And that started a whole process for me of questioning and also thinking about, if I'm really a feminist, how could I then be in favor of something that was violent and exploitive? And that process eventually led me into being vocal in the movement because I didn't see a lot of women who were speaking out about their experiences. And I thought that it would be very helpful to put a human face on it and for other women who may be having a negative experience, for them to know that they weren't alone and they didn't have to carry that pain with them for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. So when you would go to these speaking engagements, what was your objective? What were you trying to communicate at first? Because I know we talked a little bit, and you said that there was a transition in how you communicated to audiences. So at first, what were you trying to communicate when you talked to them?
Well, in the beginning, I certainly... it's been traditional in the pro-life movement to make a presentation where you talk about the humanity of the unborn and the development of the unborn throughout the stages, which I did, but I also did talk about what it's like for a woman to experience an unexpected pregnancy and what it may be like after that. But what I really found is that the moment that I would talk about the baby, my audience would turn off and become hostile.
Mm-hmm.
And they could not hear what I was trying to communicate with them. And as I studied statistics and began to realize how prevalent that abortion is in our culture. Right now, it's 1 out of 4 women at least have had an abortion, and then there's all the other family members and friends involved.
Is it higher in California, by the way?
Yes, it is. Of course, abortion statistics are a voluntary thing for states to report to the Center for Disease Control, and California 5 years ago just decided they didn't want to do that anymore.
Our guest today is Michaeline Friedenberg, the best you are ever going to hear on this topic. Please stay tuned, and we will be back. 1-800-556-1210 if you have a question for Michaeline Friedenberg.
KPRZ, San Diego, and worldwide at KPRZ.com.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having your website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
And we're back. Thanks for listening. We have guest Michaeline Friedenberg here with us talking about how she talks to audiences when she's on a speaking engagement for Life Resource Network. And we are right in the middle of talking about some statistics. Do you want to pick it up from there, Michaeline?
Yes, I do. I was mentioning that although statistics right now are voluntary for abortion providers to report to the Center for Disease Control, that Planned Parenthood's research arm, the Ellen Guttmacher Institute, does their best to gather abortion statistics. And from that, we gather that over 300,000 abortions are performed in the state of California.
Wow.
And looking at the demographics, that may mean that up to 1 out of mm-hmm. 2 women have experienced an abortion.
Mm-hmm. Would you get back to, you were talking about how you wanted to engage the audience on their point of pain, that when you started talking about the baby, you would lose them. So you started realizing that if you talked about the pain of an abortion, they were with you.
Absolutely. So realizing that so many have that in their history, whether it's their own or somebody close to them, that that can hinder us from communication. But if we can discuss and explore that, be honest about the pain that can occur after an abortion, take it out of even a legal context and just talk about the effects that it has on women. Also, for me, coming from a feminist perspective, as I did more and more research and began to realize that our founding feminists, Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, you can go on for 100 years, they were all very vocal, pro-life, because they knew that, first of all, they were nonviolent. Mm-hmm. They also wanted to look for solutions that would be holistic and uplifting to women, not something that would harm women. Also, they realize that it's illegitimate to fight for your own rights if you're denying the rights of others. But so throughout that, gathering that information, I put together and developed over the years a lecture that addresses the history of abortion in our country, the history of feminism, and then also looks at our current situation, that after 32 years of legalized abortion, our culture now really expects a woman or a couple experiencing an unexpected pregnancy to abort that baby.
Mm-hmm.
And tremendous pressure is placed upon them, so that we now have many unwanted abortions.
Mm.
And we now have sometimes systematic discrimination that happens in the workplace or on college campuses, or a lack of support that happens amongst families. And so we talk about some of the root causes. Since we're aware of the pain, and when you talk to most people and not ask them if they want it to be legal or illegal, but is abortion a good thing for women? Do
mm-hmm,
women deserve
mm-hmm.
better? They agree. Women do deserve better. Abortion isn't something to celebrate. We'd like to see it rare. And so then we can start to talk about how do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
What changes do we need to see happen?
Mm-hmm. And what changes do we need to see happen on a broad policy scale?
Well, and there are many things. And obviously it hits many levels. Years ago, Congress had tried to have put a family cap on welfare. And that's something that would have encouraged abortion in
mm-hmm.
that case for a poor woman. So there are other ways to address those issues, but without penalizing somebody for choosing to carry their child's life to term. There can be a whole host of other things that the government can do or encourage. They need to look at their part, and quite frankly, they need to look at their own practices. When I'm on Capitol Hill, staff has taken me out in the hallway to tell me about pro-life legislators who fire
mm-hmm.
their pregnant
mm-hmm.
staffers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they realize sometimes that they then are feeding right into
yeah.
that culture. So we need to address that. On college campuses, there are many college campuses that even pay for abortions in the student health plan, but there is no prenatal care or delivery that would be available for her. There's no housing available for her. There's no way for her to audit a class while she's after she's had the baby. So she finds on her college campus that she faces the choice of either carrying that baby to term and dropping out
mm-hmm.
or staying in college and having an abortion. So universities need to look at their policies and see, are they really having an environment where a woman is free to choose?
Mm-hmm.
Same in businesses.
Right. You were talking about an anchor woman the other night when the three of us sat down and talked, and she knew that if she had the baby, she wasn't going to get the anchor job.
Right.
And so that was her choice.
This was one of the local reporters here, and actually she's a reporter, not an anchor woman, but
mm-hmm.
she told me when I had mentioned discrimination in the workplace, she looked me in the eye and said, oh, I live that. When I made the decision to have my children, I knew that I wasn't going to get that position. We find that as well on university campuses, that professors face that same choice. You know, and then it goes all the way down to how do we react individually when a friend or a family member comes to us in this situation. And I'm not even talking about the person who would outwardly encourage her to have an abortion. But this woman now feels overwhelmed. She's in a crisis. She's beginning to realize how much her life will change. She's unsure if she can handle it. And if she doesn't feel overwhelming support from those around her, often she will,
mm-hmm.
you know, she will lose courage and
mm-hmm.
she will end up making a choice that she really didn't want to have to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What can an individual do when you talk to the kids or the students, the young women in these classes, and they're saying, what can I do, Michaeline? What do you tell them?
Well, and it also depends on what we're talking about. And many times they ask about someone who's had an abortion and they're realizing that it's negatively impacting their life. And they're asking, what can they do? And certainly in that case, fortunately, there are ministries that actually specialize in that. In fact, I'd like to give a phone number right now because someone may be thinking that. Silent Voices, which is located here in San Diego County, and they're actually one of the leading experts on dealing with post-abortion trauma. Their number is 619-422-0757. So that's 422-0757. And they have helps about how do you talk to a friend? How do you approach a friend? How do you offer to get them help? and will help us to understand that there is many times a period of denial or repression, and it's not our job to go try to bang through that. There will come a time, and we need to be ready for it, when they start to really deal, when those negative emotions begin to overflow, and we need to get them help. And this way we're equipped to get them help at that point in time. For someone who's facing an unexpected pregnancy, I'm always advising to sit with them and first tell them that you support them, that you will help them, that you are physically going to be there to walk them through this pregnancy and afterwards, and then encourage them to really take the time to explore their feelings, their reasons, and to try to envision what each option will be like a year, 5 years, 10 years down the road, and then put them in contact with others who've made those choices of married parenthood or single parenthood or adoption or abortion, so that they can consider all of this. But we found with most women, Planned Parenthood, from their statistics, gives us the laundry list of why most women have abortions, and it boils down, other than the very extreme cases, it boils down to a lack of practical resources and a lack of emotional support.
Thank you, Michaeline. We have a wonderful guest today, Michaeline Friedenberg. I know that this is a very personal issue, so some may want to call the other hotline she mentioned. But if there's something you're not too shy in asking her about over the air, it's 1-800-556-1210. And you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Be right back.
KPRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's family station.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. And we're back. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Pichard, and our very special guest is Michaeline Friedenberg, doing an outstanding job braving through such a difficult issue, the issue of abortion. Michaeline, I had mentioned earlier in the program that people have turned this into a men's, women's issue. But to be fair, I don't think Christians, and of course there are many pro-life people who aren't Christians too, but we've kind of grown to think of it as a Christian topic. I think Christians have sometimes made it the wrong thing to discuss as well by quoting scripture. Now, don't call in. Well, you can call in. Don't call in about this. Put your phone down. Relax. Of course, Christians quote scripture. But when I go to somebody and say, well, Psalm 139 says that the fetus is a baby, therefore you can't have an abortion, doesn't that make it sound like we're telling people that we want to impose our religion? Wouldn't there be ways where we could talk about whether or not the unborn fetus is a life and establish common ground?
Oh, absolutely. And certainly part of the difficulty that the pro-life movement encounters right now is the stereotype that it labors under, some of which we feed into either willingly or unwillingly, and that is that it's men, and men are going to tell you what to do. And not only that, it's a man with a huge Bible who's going to thump you with it. But we can communicate truth without having to quote a verse. And I speak primarily on college campuses where I do not talk, I do not quote from the Bible, I do not talk about religion nor God, but I am imparting the same truths. And that is from medical science. We know now it's not debated, it's a fact.
And once we've agreed that it's a life, which is the only relevant question to discuss, we know what we need to do. It's already protected in our Constitution. whether the Supreme Court says so or not. By the way, we're always hearing about the Supreme Court. I just got a few words for you Supreme Court fanatics. Dred Scott decision, where they ruled that your human slave is your property. You have a right to choose what to do or not to do. Well, Michaeline, I get the image sometimes, and I just get so frustrated because we're all Christians here, but sometimes I'm talking to somebody, another Christian comes along to help me, and I want to think, don't help me. I'm looking at these abortion clinics, and on one side, they're screaming, my body, my choice, like it's a mantra, like if you asked them what that meant, they wouldn't know what to tell you. And on the other side, they're singing Kumbaya or some other hymn. Nobody is talking to each other. That's why I'm so excited by what you do. When you go to these college campuses, you are destroying stereotypes. You're doing it in a gentle manner. You're doing it in a respectful manner. And I think that because we've gotten used to thinking that this is a topic men are not allowed to talk about, to have a woman come out as a woman and speak about this has so much credibility. However, some of our listening audience is men. There's a few of them out there. Do they have a right to talk about this issue, too? What would you say to encourage them or console them? They've been brainwashed since day one. You're a man. Who are you to talk about this? Is it okay for men to say, I have reasons for being against abortion? No, it's not my body, but I'm part of this society, too.
Well, obviously, men do have a right to talk about it, and they should. And I think I can help to give them some pointers, which may give them some ways to frame the issue, which are really helpful.
That would be wonderful.
And part of that is, you know, yes, we do know that about the life of the child, but for a man to dive in and talk about that first, he usually isn't going to get very far. But if he talks about it from the standpoint of what women suffer and undergo, that really helps to build a bridge there as well. I've talked about women deserve better. It's a whole campaign, women deserve better than abortion. And we've actually found, starting on Capitol Hill and other men are using it, that actually just using that phrase, that women deserve better than this, is something that they're able to say, and women understand that. Also, because we often think of this as feminists as being in favor of abortion. But for a man to be able to say that he's against violence, and he realizes this is violence and exploitation against women, and that he wants to be part of the solution and not part of the problem, I also think that those men who have participated in abortion, either because they were the one pressuring, or perhaps because their girlfriend or wife did this behind their back, or because the culture seems to tell men that the way they're supportive is just to say, whatever you want to do, honey. Mm-hmm. However it is, he has feelings about this, and he often is harmed. And not only is he harmed, but I find talking to men that they are devastated over the harm they've caused to their girlfriend or their wife. And I right now think that if we had men who would speak about that, that that would really add a lot to the discussion right now and would really help to heal part of the animosity that happens between the genders on
this
issue.
That is such an outstanding way that you're putting it. This is the example of what I was talking about, effective communication that establishes common ground. Even taking the terms that other people use, like pro-choice. I've sometimes asked the question, does a man have a right to decide whether or not he can be a parent? We don't always think about it that way. If a woman decided to have a baby and some guy had gotten her pregnant and he decided that he didn't want to be the father, he could get a paternity suit slapped on him overnight. But if she, on the other hand, decides that she doesn't want to have the baby, suddenly it's entirely her property. I just get a little scared when I hear words like property, because it does remind me a little bit of slavery.
Yes, it does. Well, in some of the most powerful moments that have happened in the college classroom are when men have actually spoken up to talk about their experiences. And recently, one of the students talked about how his girlfriend had the abortion and then told him 2 months later, and how powerless he felt over that. And it allowed me the opening to talk to the women in the classroom, and they saw for the first time through a man's eyes what that would be like to have come together and created a life and then have the woman shut him out and go off and do this. And I think it was a great teachable moment in that classroom, that those are, right now, it's something we really have to handle. It's a delicate thing, and it's kind of careful to enter into that. But I'm hopeful that men in time will begin to raise their voices and coming from that standpoint so that we can begin to understand better how devastating abortion is to all of the participants.
Absolutely, and I think that was a great moment in that classroom because it put a face on this issue. 1-800-556-1210. And Judah, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michaeleen Friedenberg.
Yeah, I had a question. One of my Christian friends says that unless you're donating to orphanages or to Christian organizations that help out single moms, that you don't have a real right to be protesting abortions because you're not doing anything to assist on the other end. And I thought that was a pretty provocative yet poignant statement. What's your position? What's the best thing a Christian can do to protest abortion in an active, positive sort of way?
Yeah, go ahead, Michaeleen.
Yes. And obviously, on one level, if somebody's rights are being violated in such a fundamental way, we can speak out, period. However, in the reality that we live in, and because, especially as Christ followers, we don't want to be people who just say things. We want to be people of action that show where we're coming from. And I absolutely believe that one of the best ways that we can be showing those around us how concerned we are for the mother and the baby are to be helping organizations that are there to help with the practical resources. And if there's a way for us to get personally involved with somebody, we should be doing that as well. I know when I speak in the college classrooms, especially with the professors who've gotten to know me over time, that part of my credibility and part of why they've begun to reconsider their own positions is because they know that I just don't go and talk about this, that I actually do things to make sure that women feel that they have all of their choices. We can't just tell them, sure, you can go and have the baby, because in some circumstances they're facing lack of housing or lack of finances, and we need to make sure that those needs are met so they can freely choose.
Wonderful question, Judah. Thank you so much for calling in. This is the Bob Siegel Show with Michaeleen Friedenberg and Sharon Kashar, and we will be right back.
This is KPRZ, 1210 AM.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuildInc.com. That's ProBuildInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuild.
We're back. This is Bob Siegel with Sharon Pichard and our special guest, Michaeleen Friedenberg. That was an interesting call, Michaeleen, and I think it does say so much when we're doing something about it and not just preaching about it. I do know, though, that there are times when Christians get too specific about what we need to do with abortion or anything else. Would you agree that there are a variety of ways that people could be actively involved in the pro-life movement, that if somebody were to say, if you don't stand in front of an abortion clinic, you're not really fighting the good fight? What would you say to that?
Right. Now, there are many, many ways that we can get involved. And in fact, I really, before someone chooses to be active in whatever way that that activity takes them, I think that the first place we have to look is inside. And what are our attitudes? And do we really live out what it is that we're saying in the way that we treat others, in the way that we'd react to others who would be in this situation? How do we react to someone who's had a past abortion? I've heard extremely harsh and hurtful things said from those who say that they are pro-life, but make horrible comments about women who have made that choice in the past. So I think we need to look inward first and then make sure that we're about the business of educating ourselves, our children, our family, and our friends, and really contemplating what is it to have an ethic that respects life and supports life. And at that point, you can be creative about where it is that you decide. If you're a business owner and the way that you treat your employees and the culture that you have, you know, where your business is. And you can go on and on.
Right.
And on.
We don't live under the law. We need to let the spirit lead a little
Absolutely.
Bit as to what we do, even though we agree on the standards. And I think that there are times when Christians do drop the ball by not talking enough about love and forgiveness. We get our wires crossed. We're trying to convince people that some sin has taken place, and we forget that our main message is supposed to be that everybody deep down inside already knows that sin has taken place. Our message is forgiveness, that God loves this person, a person that had an abortion, anybody. God loves this person so much, if they had been the only person in this world, he would have become a man, come down and died on the cross just for them. He was actually thinking about them mm-hmm. on that cross. I'd like to return to the term pro-choice, because, see, words are very important to me. That was another thing George Orwell predicted, that words would nullify our actions. Now, isn't it true that the term pro-life came out first and pro-choice was invented because they didn't actually want to say pro-death, that choice was a nicer founding word? Wasn't there some kind of group sessions and the kinds of coffee table discussions that you'd have before putting out a commercial that came up with that term?
They absolutely were, because there was a realization early on in their movement that even to say abortion rights or an abortion advocate or certainly pro-abortion, that had a very negative response from people. But they did banter around terminology. And pro-choice is a wonderful word, because in our culture we value choice and freedom, and we don't want to think that our choices are being narrowed.
Absolutely.
And so I know that's something that was embraced. I mean, to be honest, I will even use that word to describe where people are at, because I don't want to get into a debate over terminology. If I know that there's an actual activist, I do refer to them as an abortion rights activist or an abortion advocate. But if someone's going to tell me that they're pro-choice, for me, I really don't care to get into that. But what I do ask is what they do to help women with all of the choices. And that creates a great discussion of thinking about if you do support all the choices, what are you actually doing to make sure that women feel free to make that choice.
Yeah, that is such an excellent point. Why should the other side, I don't even want to call them the other side, because we should be loving everybody. Why should our friends with a different view, I should say, own all the terminology? Choice is not a bad word. I was interviewed on a radio show one time, and they were going to try to trip me up. And so they came out with abortion and 10 other hot topics. And the question, which I was supposed to answer in less than a minute, was, what is your position on abortion? And so I said, I believe in freedom of choice for all females, including baby females. And they went, okay, and they went right on to the next question. But it's interesting, the term choice is a little disingenuous at the same time, because I know there are people at Planned Parenthood, not everybody, but I've read some literature from at least some of the people at Planned Parenthood, who would like to see the day come when America imitates China. And in China, of course, you're only allowed a certain amount of children. And after that, by law, you have to get an abortion. Well, if there are people that want to imitate China, then the day's going to come when choice has outlived its usefulness, and there won't be any choice about it, will there?
There certainly are elements of some of those organizations, Planned Parenthood being one, that are very extremist on this issue. And they're not reflective of those who support their organization financially, and they're not reflective of many who even work for them. But, yes, there tend to be some of those views. And unfortunately, these organizations tend to try to export those views to developing countries where the women need health care and education. They don't need contraception and abortion.
Absolutely.
Michaeline, I just thought of something that I hear a lot. What do you do with a Christian woman who says, I would never have an abortion, or, you know, Christian man, but I would not want to impose that on someone else?
Right. When somebody tells me that basically they're personally opposed, but they can't put that on anybody else, I ask them why they are personally opposed. And they'll often tell me because it's taking a life or because it can affect a woman in a very negative manner. And then I ask them why they would then wish that on anybody else. And that, for me, to me, is a great place of a point of discussion and to really talk about and to explore their negative feelings on abortion and then to challenge that with them. If it really is negative and if it's harmful and you wouldn't want it for yourself or your daughter, then why would you want it for anybody else?
Right.
And that's the big disclaimer today with pro-choice politicians. Me personally, I think it's wrong. Reprehensible. They've been taught the new word reprehensible in the last few years. It's reprehensible. But if you want to have one, it's okay. I was in a panel discussion one time where the pro-choice person stood up, and that was their disclaimer, abortion is a tragedy. I asked a very simple question. Why is it a tragedy? If it's not a life, if it really is just a bunch of tissue, then it's not a tragedy. So I think people reveal, even in words like tragedy, how they really feel.
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned the worldview and how we're exporting this idea to other countries. And the other night when we were talking, you said that you would have an opportunity perhaps in the future to influence the UN in this?
Well, we will see. I do know right now I'm very excited because amongst the group like Feminists for Life and our own group and others, we really see this issue very holistically, very broad. We're looking for systematically illuminating the root causes of abortion. We're looking at practical solutions. We're also casting abortion in a bigger light, which we really need to step back and look at it for what it is, and that it is violent, it is exploitive, that it is a negative thing that we need not tolerate anymore. And this is something that through some of our partners in Congress, especially Congressman Chris Smith, who is really the person behind the Human Trafficking Protection Act when we're dealing with developing countries and the problems they have with slavery and forced prostitution, of helping them to see exploitation and violence against women and children as just that. And there are different ways to express that, and abortion is one of them, so that we can help them to have a healthier approach to how they deal with women and the dignity of women in these countries. And there may be opportunities. We had an opportunity earlier in the year to speak with the officials from Bosnia and Herzegovina, but that we may be able to do that with others as well, either as personally or through those that we're training, which is really our goal, is to meet people on a personal level, but also to train leaders to look at this from a bigger point of view, because they, of course, can make more change than we'll ever be able to make by ourselves.
Well, it doesn't get more dramatic than influencing the United Nations. I think she wants to influence them in a much nicer way than some people might, but what a wonderful goal. And we will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
It's radio the whole family can listen to. 1210 AM, KPRZ.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
And we're back. This is the Bob Siegel Show with Michaeline Friedenberg. Sharon, you have some information to give out about Michaeline?
Yes. I wanted to let our listeners know that you can get a hold of Michaeline at area code 619-516-1236, and that's her office at the Life Resource Network. You can also email her at liferesource@hotmail.com. And not only does she speak on college campuses, she also speaks in public high schools and religious schools from K through 12.
Well, Michaeline, the pro-life movement today, I think from the point of view of a lot of people in church, is very frustrated. But when I listen to you, it sounds like fantastic things are happening. Maybe it's happening when you're speaking and when nobody else is, but I know there are other gifted communicators and great strides. Could you summarize a little bit for us some of the great strides and accomplishments that you think are being made in the pro-life movement and some encouragement, again, of what people can do to get involved themselves?
Absolutely. You know, the pro-life movement for really a couple decades focused on educating the public about the humanity of the unborn child, and they have succeeded in that. We now know from poll after poll that people do know that a beating heart is stopped in an abortion. Majority now will say that abortion is even manslaughter. So they realize the humanity of the unborn child, and that was no easy task for the life movement to undertake, and they have accomplished that, and they've been successful. Unfortunately, abortion hasn't stopped because we still have to address the woman now and that aspect as well, and then be able to point out solutions to this. So we've reached a point where people believe that it is a baby, but that we need to tolerate the death of that child because somehow it's for the betterment of the woman.
It's really sad that we've reached a point where we're no longer arguing whether or not it's a life, but now we're hearing words like quality of life. What a dangerous precedent for our society.
It is, but I also look at it that there's a place of compassion that people are coming from, and we can tap into that. And at the same time, though, when you talk to people, they will say they don't like abortion and that they'd like to see less of them. So we now have a time where there's so much common ground that we can start there and say, okay, why is abortion something that we don't like? And what can we do to lower the number of abortions? And that's a place where we can go. Also, there's so much pain that people are dealing with that that's another point of communication, and one that will need to happen, because until people can talk about their pain and process it, we won't be able to freely move on to the natural conclusion that we know, which is just that abortion should not be tolerated because it's a violation of that child's rights, but it's also a violation of the woman and of the couple.
You probably, Michaeline, encounter Christians who, rather than embracing this idea of battling one battle at a time, will make the hill that they want to die for the top one. So a moment ago you were mentioning, okay, we can at least agree that abortion should be rare. And don't you find Christians at times that say, well, no, I don't want to agree that it should be rare. I want to get up and call women that have had abortions murderers. How do you deal with something like that? How do you talk to a person like that and say, look, we agree that we want to make this against the law, but look at what's happening now. Look at the common ground we can have now. Do you find that some people just are not going to understand, or are there things you could say that might make a difference to them?
Some are resistant. They really feel that it does have to be all or nothing. Of course, I feel like then you get nothing. But what I try to do is tell them a story about William Wilberforce. And William Wilberforce in England, when he entered into the time when he felt God was calling him to abolish slavery, to enter that battle, and he looked at where their culture was, and there's a lot of similarities between ours and how we treat abortion and theirs and how they treated slavery, and he realized if he was going to do the all or nothing route, he was going to get nothing. And so he decided that no, he was going to devote his life to this, and that he was going to move one baby step at a time, and it took 50 years. But after 50 years, 3 weeks before he died, when Parliament voted to completely abolish slavery, it was at that time a reflection of the change of hearts and minds in the people in that country who by that time were repulsed themselves, that they had ever tolerated or been a part of this. And that's the kind of cultural change that we want to see happen, that regardless of the laws, that our reaction would be one that we would feel that we had failed and that abortion would be unthinkable.
Thank you so much for joining us. See you next week, folks. You're always welcome.
The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by ProBuild, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studio, WFS Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. If you're interested in donating to this radio ministry, check out our website at www.bobsiegel.net.